Perfect. Okay, so what is up?
Hello, Ajahn Chah. Sorry, Ajahn Martin. I continue my practice. I think I'm making a little progress. I started putting a lot of attention to the daily reflection last time we talked. I continue with the struggle, which I imagine and suspect that it will take the time. I've noticed that sometimes when I try to remember every action, every thought sequentially, I don't remember a lot of things and I go through it very quickly. I tend to rush into it. And then I've tried to maybe have more samadhi. Still try to remember one action at a time, but now I'm noticing that I'm remembering more things. I'm even remembering some of the thoughts, a lot of the actions, and it's taking me much longer. Does it matter which particular way one uses it in the daily reflection? The important thing is to try to remember as much as possible, and I made some progress in that. I'm not applying judging in a lot of the things. Every once in a while, I notice that I do. But I wanted to ask you if there's any particular way that you recommend or not.
The important thing about the daily reflection is that you should have some samadhi before you do it. So, I mean, normally you do half an hour or 45 minutes of samadhi. So the mind is concentrated. And then you go, you know, you go from the morning you woke up, yeah? I mean, look at the actions, yeah? And then look at the thoughts and the feelings that followed the action. And then go to the next action, yeah? You don't have to remember every thought, yeah? And if you do that, if you can't remember, stick for a second, you know, what happened then, yeah? And if you can't remember, just go to the next thing that you remember. And over the time, yeah, I mean, it is training our memory. Over the time, it will become better and better and better. Yeah. But in the beginning, it is a lot of struggle. Yeah. The other thing that is really important, yeah, is that you do not judge what happened. Don't say it was good. Don't say it was bad. Yeah. Just look at it, yeah, with a neutral eye. Yeah. Just like somebody else, you know, observes it. Yeah. Okay?
Yeah, because the samadhi, I was not doing as much samadhi. I was doing samadhi maybe for 15 minutes. So, yes, I'll spend more time getting into samadhi. Okay, thank you, Ajahn.
Okay, next question.
Last time you gave me some advice, try and turn the spear of hatred towards the places rather than myself.
That's right.
And I had some interesting events. I was feeling upset with myself for, you know, whatever reason, and I felt the familiar desire to punish myself. With, you know, the stick to, you know, don't be so stupid, don't be incompetent, you need more panya, blah, blah, blah. And I thought about it, okay, I have a spear in my chest right now and I'm just stabbing myself over and over. Okay, so who do I direct this towards? Because obviously there's some sort of truth that something deserves to be killed, you know, so what deserves to be punished? And then I remembered in the suttas where someone asked the Buddha, you know, who am I allowed to kill? And the Buddha said, you're allowed to kill hatred. And I was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense because hatred isn't a being, right? So sila only applies to living beings. So if it's not a living being, you could do anything to it. You know, there's no immorality to it. Mm. So then I was like, okay, but where are you? You know, who's this? I want to use a bad word, but who's this guy who's messing with me? And I was like, okay, where does this fight take place? You know, the fight with the kalesas. And I was like, well, it has to take place in the khandhas, right? Because that's the only place where phenomena happens. Mm-hmm. So then I was like, where but where are you? You know, how do I put a locality, a direction, a GPS coordinates on where the Kilesa is? So I just kept asking myself that. And then I had this weird feeling that someone's watching me. Like you're in a room and you know someone's looking at you, but you don't know where. So I just turned around in my mind, like imaginarily, I had this figure of Hector, and he just turned around and there was a person there, and it was kind of creepy. And I said, okay, let's go murder this guy. So, you know, I just started walking towards him. And then I had this weird feeling of like, you have a friend who has maybe been spilling your secrets, and you go and accuse him, and he says, no, it's not me, it's someone else. It was just that feeling of like someone is, he was trying to point me away from it, from himself, and it was because he was trying to tell me, oh, this is just in your imagination, you know, this is, what are you doing? You're just playing with your imagination, you're just talking to yourself, this is, you know, this isn't me that you're trying to kill. And I was like, well, what's the worst that could happen, you know? I just kill my imagination. Okay. So I took the spear and I stabbed it. And immediately the hatred went down. And I was like, okay. Well, usually when I have thoughts of violence towards others or myself, and I engage in it and I allow myself to enjoy it, which is disgusting, but I don't judge myself for it, the hatred increases, right? You punch someone once in your mind, you want to punch them again and again. But when I stabbed him, the opposite effect happened, and the hatred went down. So I was like, okay, that's different. So I got really violent with it and was kind of having fun with it. And, you know, I was setting artillery shells towards him, and, you know, it was pretty wild. And the hatred evaporated immediately, and I entered into samadhi. So I mean, I guess the results are self-evident, but I think I'm on the right track, right? Is that, you know?
Yeah. half on the right track.
You
use too much imagination.
Okay.
I mean, okay. You have to remember, okay, there are the five khandhas, yeah?
Right.
Whatever it is, body, feeling, you know, thoughts, you know, association, memory association, yeah? And it's not the memory, it's not the association, it's not the thoughts, yeah? It's the kilesas who bring up the thoughts, yeah? So, I mean, if you attack the thoughts, yeah, or the memories that come up, you know, I mean, the hatred instantly disappears. So if you think, you know, I mean, what a stupid dumbass I am, and then you attack the thought, yeah? Then there is nothing, yeah? The hatred is gone.
Okay, yeah. Right, the fuel of the fire has been taken out, so of course the fire is stopping, right. Oh.
But you seem to have a lot of fun with fire. I mean, there's nothing wrong with this, with playing around a little bit, but you know, I mean, know that, you know, I mean, the things that bring up the thoughts, you know, that's behind, you know, you really cannot see the kilesas, you can only see the action of the kilesas. Yeah. So when they bring up a thought, when they bring up a memory, yeah, it is the dark, it's a dark, you know, it's a dark side, you know, that brings up these thoughts, yeah, and, yeah. So you attack the thoughts that are brought up, you know, or the memories or the feeling that brought up, you attack them and take out the wood out of the fire, and then, you know, the fire has to decrease, yeah, cease to exist, yeah.
Okay, so is it sort of like a suba or anything like that? It's a piece of cheese.
Yeah.
And that's what tempts the kilesas to come towards you, right?
Yes.
So I'm doing death meditation and fear and anger arises.
Yeah.
That brings the mouse to come near me because I can only fight the kilesas if they're close, right? So I have to bring them to me first, and then the mouse trap is the investigation.
Let me think about it.
Sorry. Analogies help me.
Um, Yeah, when, okay, now let me try if I understand it correctly. So you picture a very beautiful woman, yeah, that is the cheese.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the Kalesas come out and say, I want it, I want it, I want it, yeah? And then you trap them in there, you know, and then you turn the beautiful woman into something disgusting, you know, and then, yeah?
Yeah, yes. So, but I'm still fighting thoughts. So when is the Kalesa going to get its head cut off? I mean, I guess I'm rushing for results, but I'm trying to get to the fundamental, but no, it's unspeakable because it's just the chitta eventually getting the point. I mean, I don't.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the kilesas are a manifestation, and they only come out, you know, in the forms. You know, they don't exist without the realm of the five khandhas. Yeah. So the path of deliverance is, you know, I mean, to see what the khandhas are really, yeah, what are the khandhas, you know, so that the kilesas, you know, cannot use these khandhas anymore to lure you into something, you know, that doesn't exist. So the kilesas are a phenomena. They can only exist within the realm of the five khandhas. But they are not the five khandhas. Yeah. Because they are good thoughts, you know, I mean, the thought, you know, I want to sit and meditate or I want to investigate, it is a good thought, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, kind of, but it's still a great, but that's down the line. I can't worry about that. No.
You need it.
Right.
Okay. Otherwise you wouldn't sit down.
Right. Okay. Well, then that leads to my last question. Sometimes when I'm in a Subha and death meditation, I mean, it's like I'm a dog who won't let go of something because I cannot stop doing death meditation. I mean, it's on my mind constantly. And while I'm doing it, sometimes I can enter into this, I wouldn't even call it samadhi. It's just this, I'm fearless. It's like I'm walking through a battlefield and I don't care if I get blown up. Like, I have no fear whatsoever, but it's this particular spot I have to stay in. It's like this little like outline that I can put myself into, and if I'm in it, I'm good. If I'm out of it, I'm scared, I'm angry, and blah, blah, blah. The only problem when I'm in it is I hear this voice that tells me I'm being arrogant, that, oh, you think you're so cool, you can, you know, you can't do this, you're not strong enough, you're not smart enough. And there's like this, but I recognize that this is like some sort of conceit, like, oh, I'm so cool, you know, I can become an arhat one day, blah, blah, blah. But can I use that to my advantage, that arrogance? Or is it just another trap?
It's difficult to say because When you feel, you don't feel cool, you know, but you see the things as you are when you walk through the battlefield, yeah? But then you trip out of samadhi, it's a form of samadhi where you're fearless, yeah? You trip out, you know, and instantly, you know, the kilesas come up, you know, and say, you know, I mean, you're arrogant, yeah? And say,
yeah.
Then you fight them, you know, you said, I don't care, yeah? And then you go back to your battlefield or whatever it is, or the field of corpses. Yeah?
Right.
Don't pay attention to it. Yeah. So, I mean, when you're in samadhi, you're absolutely fearless. There's no future. There's no past. Yeah. And you just see things as they are. Yeah. But the moment a thought comes in and said, you are an arrogant, you know, what? Yeah. Ask them, well, what is the meaning of being arrogant when I walk through these fields?
It's just like I think they're just angry they can't touch me. That's because I die in the battlefield, I feel my corpse drop, you know, I go limp, and then another form comes up to take its place, you know, a deva form or another human form. It's like, you can't stop me. There's nothing that can stop me. I'm, you know, eventually I'm going to get to the general and cut his head off. There's nothing that can, you know, okay, so I should use this. Okay.
But try not to use so much imagination. It is fun, yeah. It is fun, you know. But you know, you program with this, you know. I mean, these thoughts, you know, about the errands that also come in, yeah. I mean, it's fun, you know, to imagine certain things, you know. But you know, try to keep it down, yeah.
Okay.
So then nothing. Then nothing comes in and disturbs you. You know?
I understand. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, we have somebody else?
Hi, I'm Justin.
Yeah, who is that?
Hi. I'm Joseph.
I don't see. Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah? Well,
I want to ask you something. Because in your talks, I've heard you mention that when we listen to talks, we don't listen with thinking. We listen with the citta.
Yeah.
Can you explain a bit more on this?
When you listen to a talk, you go with your point of concentration. When you do Anapanasati, the point of concentration is around the nose. When you do Buddha, the point of concentration is with the Buddha. Yeah. When you listen to a talk, the point of concentration is actually the citta, yeah. And then you try to see how that what you listen to forms here in the heart first before it actually enters your ear. So you see, there's a very slight, you know. It's the same thing when you listen to a person. You can try it out, you know. You listen to a person and you listen with your heart and you know, yeah. Because the intention of the other person is faster than what you hear, than the sound that comes into your ear and is processed. Yeah. So go there. Yeah. Concentrate there and concentrate on every word. Yeah. Without, you know, thinking about what is said. Yeah. It takes a long time. It's a training. Yeah.
Yeah, because people like me, we have been so used to listening in our mind.
Yes.
By thinking, not with the heart, not with the heart. And very often I find that this thinking is very slow and it's very confusing. And to understand people when they speak, sometimes it's very confusing.
Mm.
So I think that is the wrong way of listening.
I wouldn't say it's the wrong way of listening. It's the listening of people, you know, living in this world. That's what they do.
The mundane type of listening.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we listen with our ears, we process, you know, the questions or what they say, and then react on what we think they said, yeah. What they actually might not have said, you know, but what we think they said, you know, we react to this, you know, and that when we do that, you know, a lot of misunderstanding comes up. But if we listen to the heart, then we understand, you know, the other person correctly, even if we think he says something differently. So this is a great skill.
Yes, exactly, because this is the first time I'm listening from someone like you who says we listen with the citta, not with the thinking. And I have realized that it is very true because I notice when all of us speak to you, and it's a lot of words, and when I try to listen, I find it difficult to understand the people. But I find that you can listen, you can catch what we are saying. It's very interesting. That shows listening with the citta is very clear and there's little misunderstanding.
But we have to
learn how to do it.
The best way to learn it is to listen to the talks. Yeah? And you will, and there's one thing that you will notice, yeah. I mean, at least I notice it. When I listen to teachers who talk, you know, from their mind, I cannot stay within my heart. Yeah? It is disturbing to my heart, you know, if somebody speaks from his mind or from his memory. But if he speaks from the heart, you know, the heart speaks directly to my heart. So I know this person speaks out of experience. You understand?
Exactly. Yes, and it is from experience, and that is life coming out.
It's coming out of the heart.
There is no life coming up from speech that comes from intellectual knowledge. But from the heart, when we speak, there is life coming up.
Yeah, so yeah, train it.
Another?
Yeah?
Yes. Yes. I want to try to learn how to do it. And another thing is, I try to recite Bhutto, and sometimes when I recite Bhutto in my mind, but not in my mouth, not vocally, but mentally, Bhutto, 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 Bhutto. Sometimes it can become very peaceful. No mental proliferation. It becomes very peaceful.
Yeah.
But sometimes I feel that my head is very tense, becomes tense. I don't know what is the reason.
You try too hard. That is normally the reason. It's the same thing with the breath meditation. If you try too hard to focus on the breath, you know, and force it too much, then, you know, I mean, tensions arise, yeah? So then relax a little bit, you know, and the tensions go away. Just, you know, once you install the Bhutto, it will be automatically repeated, and then you start to listen much more to the Bhutto, yeah? It's like a program. The moment we install a program, you know, on Windows, and we say start, then it is running, yeah? And then we can watch what this program is doing, yeah? And that is the same with the Bhutto. But it takes some time, yeah? And then sometimes the program is interrupted, you know, so we bring the program back, yeah? Yeah? Onto the forefront, yeah? Because sometimes it goes into the background.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so I am learning, but at times I feel that when I do it, I can come to a point of very peaceful.
Yes, that is the correct way. Yeah. So you investigate, what did you do that it becomes peaceful, and how did you do with the Bhutto, you know, that it becomes peaceful, and then the next time when you get the tension, what did you do, or what was the state of your mind, yeah? So compare that, and then see, you know, what actually lead you to peacefulness, and what lead you to the tensions, yeah?
Yeah. Can I ask one more question?
Yeah, go ahead.
In some traditions, Theravada traditions, there's some emphasis on studying the suttas and for knowledge. Yeah. But I'm wondering how useful is it to read a lot and to gain knowledge of the suttas and so on. Is it practical to read books and have knowledge and so on, or is it better to focus on the practice of sila, samadhi, and panya, on the training, instead of...
Yeah. This is a question, you know, I mean, it is the same thing, yeah? I mean, some teachers say, you know, you read the Buddha, read the suttas, you know, other teachers say do this and do that. It is the same thing when we went to school. The first time we went to school was kindergarten, then primary school, then secondary school, then high school, and then university. I mean, if you finished high school, you don't need to go back to primary school. And that is the same with the training. So if you're not really interested, yeah, in reading anything, don't read, yeah? I mean, observe. Remember one thing, yeah, about all the suttas, yeah? I mean, how did the Lord Buddha, you know, got to the suttas, you know, got to the teaching? By looking at his own heart or looking at the citta. So if you go to the citta, I mean, all the questions that you will have, you know, will be answered there. So you don't really need to read the books, yeah? But sometimes, you know, sometimes when when our practice is very tough, you know, then it is okay, you know, to read one of the suttas, yeah? So, because the suttas are also something, you know, that gets us inspired, yeah? But if our practice is well, you know, yeah, don't, there's no need to do it. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much, Ajahn.
Carlos, you next.
How is it up there? Is it warm?
It is warm. Well, it's really early here.
3 o'clock or
really
what?
Really early in the morning. Ah. What's that?
3 o'clock or what?
Yeah, it's 3:33 actually.
Okay.
It's really quiet. It is very nice for meditation actually. At this time.
Actually, if you go back 1 hour, yeah, between 1 and 2, it is the perfect time for meditation because everything quiets down.
Oh, what? Yes. Sometimes I just naturally wake up at that time. And sometimes I take the advantage. Some other times I'm lazy. but it is a really great time for meditation. That is true. I wanted to ask you, I've been for the last few years, as I entered into Buddhism, like really seriously. So I've been trying to get away from entertainment. Obviously, one of the main things that I did before was chasing women and, you know, try to go to parties and stuff like that to keep myself, I guess, happy in my naive mind before. But now I don't do anything of any of that. And as I've been telling you, I've been focusing a lot in trying to fight my lust and trying to observe myself, my tendencies. I've been gaining some progress. Sometimes I really feel really happy about it. But some other times, it feels like, are you familiar with the movie Groundhog Day? Groundhog Day?
Yes, it's a very good movie.
And the same, and you just feel that you're cleaning, and then again there's the dirt there, and you clean, and it's again and again. But I thought I already cleaned this, and it's dirty again. What's happening? Sometimes it feels like really like a big burden, like I feel frustrated. And because I don't have the entertainment or the chasing women or these other things, that I don't go like to find like pleasure now to satisfy myself. So sometimes what I do is I read some suttas or I listen to a teaching and that helps me again to regain some power and some motivation. But sometimes it's not even enough, and I feel like really, like out of fuel, like frustrated, like really frustrated, like overburdened, like it's really heavy. So lately, when I feel like that, I've been trying to kind of like focus my attention and try to observe and ask, okay, who is this who's feeling overburdened and frustrated? So what is that? Is there anybody there actually? So. And I don't know, I feel that kind of helps, but I'm not sure if I'm on the right path doing that. What do you think?
if you have this feeling, you know, of being overburdened or, you know, having no energy, yeah, then feel it completely, and then say, there is a feeling. Who is the one who is observing? There is a feeling, yeah? Once you can accept the feeling itself, ask yourself, what came before that feeling? What kind of thought, what kind of memory came before this feeling? What came before this thought? What came before this memory? Or what came before that feeling? Yeah? So go down to find the stone. I mean, you live in a region where you have avalanches, yeah? You just need a little stone, you know, to create an avalanche. You know, You know, you put a stone into the snow, it rolls down the mountain, and with every movement, you know, it takes on more snow and more snow and more snow. In the end, you know, I mean, the snowball is so big that it, you know, overrolls you. Yeah. But if you find the stone, yeah, that causes the avalanche, then you pick it out and nothing happens. That means, you know, I mean, you accept the feeling, yeah. You don't say it's you. You just say, there's a feeling, accept it, feel it, and then ask yourself what came before. Yeah? What kind of thought, what kind of memory came before? Yeah? And then go back and back and back until you find the stone. I mean, in the beginning you won't find it, but at least you know what kind of mixture is it, you know, that produced that feeling that you have. Yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of like I've been doing that, trying to find like more detail in detail whatever feeling or whatever sensation I was.
But don't blame yourself, yeah, because there's nothing behind it, yeah. So tell yourself, yeah. I mean, at the moment, you know, I'm talking a lot about anatta in my talks. Yeah, I mean, see that, yeah. There is a feeling, there is a thought, there is a memory, yeah. And distance yourself because there is somebody who knows that there is a thought, and we concentrate on the one who knows that there is a thought, the one who knows that there is a feeling, but the one who knows is not that feeling. You understand that?
Yes.
So you distance yourself, and the moment you distance yourself, you can see the feeling, evaluate the feeling, feel it, yeah, and then go and then ask the question, what came before the feeling? What kind of thought or memory or, you know, and what came before that and before that and before that, you know, roll it back, yeah, until you see what actually caused it, yeah, because the feeling itself, yeah, it's a process, you know, that you're overwhelmed or, you know, I mean, frustrated or whatever it is, yeah. But it caused much, much earlier than this, yeah. Okay?
Thank you, Bhante.
And an advice, you know, sometimes, yeah, when you have, be careful. When you have, you know, when you have an urge, you know, I mean, to go to a restaurant, you know, or just look, yeah. I mean, if you have enough sati, do it. So that the heart sees, you know, that there is no fun in it. We have to teach sometimes the heart, yeah. I mean, whatever we do, you know, when we go, you know, when we go shopping or when we go eating, yeah. See what is actually happening, yeah. If we have enough sati, we can do it. And then the heart sees, you know, and once the heart sees that there's no fun in it, it doesn't want to do it anymore. So we don't have to suppress it. You understand?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I understand, Bhante. I believe that I have gotten to a point where I don't really have to go and pursue. I don't really miss all things that I had before. I still have some, you know, struggling with my kind of like loss when I see like a beautiful woman and something. There's still like the tendency to look and then to...
Yeah, look to at it. Look at it, you know, and see. You see what it is. Yeah? Tell you its form, its color. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I've been actually doing kind of like that. So, okay. So, let's say if this beautiful woman just come to you and invites you home. What's that about? What is the satisfaction in that? I mean, even if we go all the way, then I'll have to take her to dinner, and then I have to start a family, and then I'll have to spend money on that. And, you know, it's just a pursuit that I'm not really interested in. So then it dies.
Okay.
So I've been using that technique, yeah. Really helpful, really efficient.
And also the other thing that you mentioned about the dirty laundry that you thought that you washed, you know, and it's coming back. It will come back, you know, until it's really clean, yeah? And then it won't come back, yeah? So don't be surprised, you know, even after years, certain things will still come back because they are so deep within our heart, you know, that the heart has not yet completely let go of it, yeah? So it will come up, yeah? So then just say, okay, let's clean it again. And don't worry, yeah? Just don't worry about it, you know, say, oh, why does it come up? No, that is a useless thought, yeah? You see the dirty laundry, you know? Okay, clean it, you know, and then put it away, yeah? And then after a month, it's dirty again. Okay, clean it, yeah? That is the way of practice, you know. I mean, it comes up, you know, it comes up, yeah. But you will see, the more we work with it, I mean, the less our emotion gets piled up, yeah. If there's a lot of emotion, you know, when we see some things, you know, and a lot of emotion comes up, you know, that means, you know, I mean, we really have not understood, you know, the process of it. So we need to clean it again, yeah. And we clean it and clean it and clean it. And each time, you know, I mean, it gets less and less and less troublesome. That's what you're going to see, you know, when you do that, yeah? And so don't ask this question, you know, why is it coming up? Okay, just see it. Oh, okay, there you are again, you know, okay, let's wrap it off, yeah?
Okay, great. Thank you so much, man.
Okay, next.
Yeah, anyone have questions to ask? Don't say? Yeah. Yeah. Greeting, Prajan. May I ask, I'm a householder with wife and children. So I understand that the five hindrances and sensuous pressures is one of the hindrances. So my question is sexual activities with our spouse considered as one of the hindrances in our meditation?
I wouldn't consider it to be a hindrance in your meditation, yeah? I mean, it depends on what you want, what part of, yeah? Even a sotapanna, you know, can have sex with his wife, you know, I mean, that is not a hindrance, yeah? What is a hindrance to the practice are the five precepts, yeah? So sexual misconduct is a hindrance. It's a very strong hindrance in our practice, yeah? I mean, lying is a hindrance in our practice. Not taking what is not given is a hindrance. So, as long as you keep the five precepts, you know, there shouldn't be any hindrance for meditation, yeah? But if you want to overcome sexual desire, then of course you have to let go of it, yeah? If you're not interested, yeah? If you want to read Sotapanna, you know, I mean, that is fine, yeah? So the hindrance is, you know, the hindrance are really the five precepts, not keeping the five precepts, yeah?
That means my interpretation of the sensual pressures for hindrances, which includes the sensual desire as well. So is that a wrong interpretation of, my wrong interpretation of the five hindrances? Because my feeling is that sexual intercourse with our spouse is considered as one of the five hindrances.
I've never heard of that, yeah? I heard of sloth and torpor. I mean, I can't remember, I heard them so often.
And there is sensual desire.
What? Sensual desire, yeah? Not I mean, I mean, if you keep it at bay, you know, I mean, if you have sex certain times a day, you know, it's a bit too much, yeah? But if you have sex, you know, once a week, you know, I don't see anything wrong with it, yeah? That is, I wouldn't call it a hindrance, yeah? Sensual desires, yeah? I mean, if you ask yourself, you know, well, what is it that you want, you know, when the sexual desire comes up, yeah? That's perfectly fine. Let it, you know, let it be. But what happened before that? Just like with the other person, you know, ask, what happened before it, yeah? Is there some dissatisfaction, or is there this, or is there that? You know, what kind of memory, what kind of thought, yeah? the other thing is, yeah, I mean, when you put down your time, you know, okay, now I'm going to start to meditate for 1 hour. Then, of course, you have to get rid of these sensual desires, yeah? And sloth and torpor and the other hindrances. Yeah? If you do the meditation, then you have to get rid of it. You cannot indulge into it. Yeah? And then after the meditation, you know, okay, go ahead and do whatever you want to do. Yeah?
Okay, thank you, Ajahn.
Anyone with questions? Want to ask? No.
Ajahn, I would like to ask you, in human intelligence, where does human intelligence lie? Is it in our conducts or is it in the chitta?
Wisdom is in the chitta, intelligence is in the khandhas. But it's both. I mean, when you think about, you know, when you're born, yeah? I mean, every being that is born into a human form, yeah? Some of them, some of the kids, you know, are intelligent, you know, from the start-up, and other kids are not intelligent from the start-up. What we do is, yeah? What we do is when we are born, yeah? When we are born, we have to learn to program this body, yeah? So I mean, whatever is in the chitta at the time of birth, yeah? I mean, that's what we are going to put into this body, yeah? Just like, you know, we buy a computer, yeah? And then we, yeah, put the software that we want, that we like, onto this computer, yeah? So it's not the software that was intelligent, it is the, you know, the one who puts the software on the computer and uses it, it is intelligent, yeah? Yeah? So the intelligence, yeah? I mean, normally when we talk about intelligence in the mundane world, yes, it is thinking I haven't talked about that for a long time, so I'm missing the words, yeah? Deduction, yeah? And so, I mean, it is, you know, thinking and deduction, you know, I mean, that forms the intelligence, yeah? But the wisdom comes from the heart, yeah? I mean, the things are coming actually from the heart, but we have put it into the brain, you know, so that it functions much faster, you know, when it is already in the brain, yeah? Than when it comes from the chitta, yeah? But the original intelligence or wisdom is in the chitta. So in the next life, but whatever we acquire in this life, you know, will be retained in the chitta. So in the next life we are born, you know, we have this as a goal, as a startup, yeah? I mean, we have all these apps that we programmed in this life, you know, will be there in the next life, if we have the fortune, you know, to be a human being or a deva, yeah? Yeah? Okay?
So you are saying that wisdom is more important,
of course,
than intelligence, because intelligence is mainly used in a mundane life.
Yes, and intelligence can can be a problem, yeah, when it interferes with wisdom. We think we know, yeah, but the chitta actually does not know, yeah. So I mean, the more intelligent people are. I mean, my teacher, my venerable teacher, Lungta Mahabho, said one time one thing, yeah, because there were quite a few doctorates, yeah, who came to listen to his talks, you know, and then he said one thing, yeah. I mean, the more intelligent you are in the world, the more stupid you are in the Dharma. Because you think you know everything, yeah, but actually you don't know anything, yeah. So that's where the difference goes, yeah? The higher our education is, the more intelligent, the more we think we know, yeah? I mean, look at the world, you know? I mean, they always, you know, praise doctors, you know, and he's this and he's that, you know? Huh? So they become conceited and they don't think, you know, they don't know, yeah?
So their ego takes over their heart.
Yes, yes. I mean, our ego takes our heart. We don't have to be studied very much, you know, and still our ego takes over our heart, yeah? Because we think we know, we think we can do it, you know, that. Okay?
Thank you.
Well, actually, where are you from, Joseph?
Oh, I'm from Malaysia.
Oh, you're KL, or?
Kuala
Lumpur. Oh, yeah, okay.
Thank you, Ajahn.
You're welcome.
Yeah, if you do want to ask directly, you can type your question in the chat. I can read all your questions as well. So, Lompo, can I go to the question that's submitted online? There's just one question.
Yeah?
Yeah, but this question is quite complicated. This is a long question. I wonder about the origin of the law of karma. For me, the karmic law and also the fact of the Dharma seem moral appear to me not like something naturally evolved, but seem given by a good creator. How can I imagine the cause or origin of, for the law of karma and the Dharma, really?
I have, this person is German, and he wrote the original question in German as well. I don't think he's English. I can read the German.
Yeah, I can add, I can. There's a very simple answer. Don't even think about it. Where's the origin of this world? How did, you know, how did these 31 realms of existence, how did they evolve, you know? How did the law of karma evolve, yeah? No, there is no creator, yeah? That is one thing that is for sure, yeah? There is no creator, things evolve, yeah? But if you want to think about, you know, the origin of all this, the only thing that happens to you is you become crazy. Just like with a lot of, you know, these philosophers, you know, the highly... philosophers who all got, you know, got crazy. So what is the German? I'll read the German question.
It's pretty much the same.
Actually,
it's
what?
It's pretty much the same. It's just a bit more clear maybe, but still the question about the origin of karma.
Yeah. But, you know, maybe we should answer him in German, no?
Yes.
Yeah. So I'll read the German and then we answer him in German. Okay. Yeah.
Hallo, ich frage mich seit langem, wo das Karma-Gesetz herkommt. Es scheint mir ein moralisches Naturgesetz zu sein, aber ich kann mir nicht vorstellen, dass es nicht von einer moralischen Schöpfung herkommen kann. Gibt das Dhamma dazu eine Antwort? Was denkt ihr zu meiner Überlegung? Vielen Dank.
Ja, das Dhamma gibt dazu eine einzige Antwort. Wir sollen nicht über den Ursprung von diesen Dingen nachdenken, weil wir wissen es nicht, ne? Und je mehr wir nachdenken, umso verrückter werden wir, weil wir es nicht erfahren können, wir können es nicht wissen. Aber es gibt keinen Schöpfer, im Dhamma gibt es keinen Schöpfer. Wir sind alle Wesen, ne, die zusammen etwas kreieren. Er braucht sich nur mal Sachen anzuschauen, ein Flugzeug. Ne? Der braucht so viele Menschen, ne, um das kreieren zu können. Ne? Die einen sind dafür verantwortlich, die anderen sind dafür verantwortlich und zusammen, ne, evolviert das. Ja? Es entsteht aus der Zusammenarbeit von gewissen Wesen. Ja? Und so kann er sich vorstellen, ich weiß es nicht, ob es stimmt, aber so kann er sich vorstellen, dass die ganze Welt entstanden ist, ne? Indem Wesen zusammengearbeitet haben und das kreiert haben. Ne? Und bestimmte, wir haben als Kinder haben wir Spiele gemacht, ne, und dann haben wir die Regeln festgesetzt. Ja? Und alle Kinder haben zugestimmt, oder? Mit sich zueinander?
Hm? Ja, sich dann nicht dran gehalten.
Ja, das ist wieder eine andere Sache. Ne? Wenn sie verloren haben, haben sie. Aber wir haben ein Spiel erfunden und haben die Regeln gesetzt. Ne? Und du kannst es ungefähr damit vergleichen, ne, mit den ganzen Weltsystemen. Aber im Laufe der Zeit ist es alles detaillierter geworden. Das soll sich darum nicht kümmern. Aber das Einzige, was das damals sagt, es gibt keinen Schöpfer. Ne? Okay, so, next.
No, I think I just go. No questions.
In the last few talks, I talk a lot about the principle of anatta. You can also use the principle of anicca. Whatever arises, ceases. Yeah? I mean, the body is born and it dies. A thought arises and ceases. A memory arises and ceases. Yeah? A feeling arises and ceases. And whatever arises and ceases is not us. Yeah? Because we can know the principle of anatta. Whatever I can experience cannot be me, because who is the one who experiences it? Yeah? This is really important, and sometimes, you know, sometimes when we feel down, you know, we need to use this principle. Yeah? I mean, there's a feeling, you know, and then we look, I mean, it's our assertion that this is feeling down. Yeah? How does this feeling look like? Yeah? Experience it, you know, and then ask what came before that. Yeah? This is the way to use it. Yeah? There is a feeling, and when there is a feeling, it's not me that feels it. Yeah. So I can look at it, yeah? Just like, you know, like a look at a tree, or like a look at a house, or like a look at another person. I can, you know, see this, yeah, the form and the color of this person, or the form and the color, you know, of the tree and so on, or of the flower and whatever. Yeah, this is very important. There is something. Yeah, it is. There is a thought. Yeah, I mean, the thought doesn't know that it is a thought. We assert that this is a thought. We assert that this is a feeling. We assert that this is a positive feeling, negative feeling, yeah, or a neutral feeling. This is what we do, you know. I mean, that is the subject, you know, the object is the, yeah, is a feeling, or is a thought, or is a memory, or is the assertion, or whatever, yeah. Don't identify with this, yeah. Always stay there, otherwise you, the moment, you know, you moment, you tell yourself, I'm sad, over. There's nothing else that you can do, yeah. You can just swallow in, you know, oh, I'm so sad, I'm so unhappy, and so on, yeah. There's nothing you can do. But when you say there's a feeling, and let's see, and let's feel it, you know, let's experience, you know, then you can do something, yeah. You can see how it arises, you know, and you can see it, how it ceases, yeah. You can see the anicca aspect, or you can see the dukkha aspect in it. That it is unsatisfactory or dissatisfactory, yeah? Discomfortable or whatever you want. Yeah? This principle of anatta or anicca, you know, or dukkha, you know, these are the three main characteristics, you know, of everything that exists in this universe. There's nothing, you know, that lasts. Yeah? The only thing, when we want to go to Nibbana, that is the only thing that lasts, that is for eternity. Yeah? But until we get there, you know, we have to use, you know, we have to use the mundane, you know, to investigate, yeah? And we investigate, yeah, we investigate it by saying there is, huh? Not I am, huh? There is, huh? There is a feeling, huh? When I, for instance, I define myself, I'm an engineer, yeah? Then there's nothing I can do, yeah? There is something, you know, who knows about engineering. There's a knowledge about engineering, yeah? I'm not an engineer. Yeah, I can be anything that I want to, yeah? I can be, you know, cleaning the streets, or I can be a dishwasher, or I can be, you know, the CEO of a company, yeah? But that is identification. And the higher, you know, the higher the value of the identification in our society is, huh, the more likely we become arrogant, yeah? And we look down on other people, yeah? And that, you know, that lets us fall into a really deep hole, yeah? Sooner or later. This conceit, yeah? I mean, be it the conceit that we are really good, yeah? I mean, I talked about it, yeah? When we feel, you know, we are not worth anything, or when we feel nobody, you know, cares for us, yeah? That is also conceit. Conceit is the notion of thinking something what I am. Now, being I am super, you know, I am being, you know, completely the opposite, is still conceit. Yeah? In conceit, we have to fight conceit. Yeah, and conceit comes through memories and comes through thought. Yeah? So when we use this principle of anatta, there is a thought, you know, okay. Yeah? And we'll just let it pass away. Yeah? And see, you know, what brings up this kind of thought, yeah? Be it the thought, you know, I'm super, or being the thought, I'm completely, you know, useless, or, yeah? Or worthless, or whatever, yeah? What brings up this thought, yeah? This is really something that we have to use, and we can use it in the mundane way very well, yeah? I mean, there are so many occasions, especially when we are still working, yeah? I mean, somebody says, you know, you did something wrong, and we get upset, you know? I mean, what is there to get upset about it? When we did really something wrong, you know, I mean, yeah, please show us the way how to do it correctly. Yeah? Why should we get upset? Because of our conceit. We think we know it, we think we've done it correctly, and that is our conceit. Yeah? The more we can fight the conceit, I mean, the more happy we live in this world, yeah? Just don't think how you are, just see what is happening, yeah? That is what is really important in our life. What is happening? What kind of thought arises? That's why I ask you, you know, to do the daily reflection. What kind of thoughts arise? What kind of memories arise? And what kind of actions do I do? That's how we can, yeah? We should not define ourselves. That's how we can see what is happening inside of ourselves. But to take any kind of notion, that's how I am, yeah? I mean, then somebody else says, no, you're not like this, you know? And then of course, you know, we feel depressed, you know, or we need to defend ourselves, yeah? Ego is nothing else, yeah? No matter how this ego is, you know, is it up, down, or is it up, completely up in the cloud, or is it down, you know, yeah? In a hole in the ground, yeah? No matter what, yeah? This ego, the moment we defend it, yeah? I mean, it becomes stronger, yeah? Somebody attacks it, you know, and then we mend it instantly. We said, no, I'm not like this, yeah? No, I'm not like this. You know, see, you know what I did, you know? So how can I be like this, yeah? That is mending our castle of the ego, yeah? No matter where it is, yeah? Be it up or be it down. So remember this, yeah? Because a lot of people think, you know, conceit is only the conceit to be better than others. No. The conceit can be also being worse than others. Yeah? I'm not as good. Actually, you know, when you think about conceit, yeah, there's the eighth fetter. Yeah? and it says, you know, conceit, yeah, that is the highest conceit. Yeah, not the world, yeah, I'm not talking about the worldly conceit. Conceit is thinking that you're better than somebody, thinking that you're equal to somebody, or thinking that you're lower than somebody. Yeah. So a student, yeah, for me it was a very difficult time, you know, when I was fighting it, you know. I mean, of course I'm not as clever as my Kuba Achan, as my Venerable Achan. Yeah, I'm much, so much lower. But that is also conceit. And I, sooner or later I realized that this is also conceit that, you know, doesn't let me act in a free way and manner. Yeah. Just remember this, you know, that is the end, yeah. Are there any questions from the people who are sitting there? Yakmani?
Yeah,
no,
there's one question.
Yeah.
From, yeah, you can go ahead. Oh, I think it dropped out. Oh, Ajahn? Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, a question around the conceit. So I've noticed that, you know, I struggle with one of the feelings. I get very strong feelings, usually of aversion. When I've been providing for my family for the last 15 years. I have a daughter. Mm. And now that you mentioned that, and I want to ask you if you think that this is conceit, that I get a feeling of aversion when I don't deliver, or when, you know, I'm not able to provide as I did in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds a lot like conceit, what you just described. And I can see when I get that feeling, I can see that my thought starts bubbling very rapidly. So I try to get into samadhi, and when I get a time, I try to investigate sometimes. But I can only get so far. But I think now that you're mentioning the conceit piece, it sounds a lot like that's behind these strong feelings and thoughts.
Yeah. Your conceit is that you have to provide for your daughter. But maybe your daughter, I don't know how old your daughter is, you know, if she's already over 20, then she has to learn how to provide for herself, yeah? So, I mean, there's an end for providing to other people, yeah? But the conceit, yeah, I mean, with parents, you know, I see it very often, yeah? I mean, I see it especially in Thailand. I don't know where you live, in Canada or in...
I live in Texas, but I am from Dominican Republic, but I live in Texas.
Dominican Republic, yeah. There is probably a differently, yeah, because the family structure in the Dominican Republic is much stronger than in Texas, you know. In Texas, everybody lives for itself, yeah. But here, you know, in Thailand, you know, I mean, even if the mother has a child that is 40 years old, has its own, you know, I mean, she still cares and she will still provide, you know. But that is the feeling of caring for somebody. It's not, I should do it. Yeah? This should do it is conceit. Yeah? Now, I mean, what you are able to do, if you have something to give to your daughter, give it to her. If you don't have anything, don't have bad feelings for it. Yeah? It's this should that creates this conceit. Yeah? I should be able to provide for my wife or for my kids. Yeah, if I'm not able to, yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Ajahn.
Okay, so if there are no more questions, you know, I mean, then we can. Oh, today we are really quick. Yeah, we are really early. You know, closing down.
No more.
Yeah.
Hector has a question, I think.
Sorry, I'm here. I'm back. You struck me exactly right when you were telling about your relation to Longda Mahabua and how you saw him so above you and you yourself so lower. And it hit me really hard, because I remember when I first saw Longda Mahabua on a video, I knew with my heart, like I saw this man, and it was, I don't know if I've met him in a previous life or something, but I knew. And this conceit that you were talking to me about earlier, about this feeling of, you know, I'm deathless, you know, I can, you know, I can win, it's conceit, and I looked at it, and I know exactly to a certain extent what it is. When I read the suttas or when I see Mahabua or I see you, I feel this amazing inspiration. And it's almost like a healthy competition of sorts, of like, you know, they're at the top of the mountain, they've slain Abhija, you know, oh yeah, I can do that, you know, like, you know, they give it, it's the banner of the Buddha, you know, it's, he's at the top of the mountain, come chase me, you know, you can get here too. And when I feel this deathless confidence inside of me, I feel similar to Ignacio, the aversion towards yourself. Like, for him, it's providing for his family. For me, it's this, you know, I can be the champion too. And then I hear this feeling of, no, you can't. And then question that as you were talking, because you said to me, ask yourself, where is the conceit in the confidence of being deathless? And the response that comes up is there is no conceit there. It's just knowing. The only time it becomes conceit is if you associate with the pride that arises from the, I can do that, I can be the champion, I can be an arahant, right? So what was your strategy for seeing Longda Mahabua as a great being, an arahant, an inspiration, and then also having the pride or the arrogance, or not quite, but you know, that I can do that too. How do I do that in a healthy way without letting it get into arrogance?
It's by cutting down the association with the things that you're doing. Yeah, when you associate, you know, I'm fearless. Yeah, that is a form of conceit. Yeah, so I mean, you have to get rid of the mundane conceit first before you can get rid of the, I mean, this is really very detailed, very subtle conceit, yeah, that you know, I mean, yeah. I mean, what I did, you know, I can tell you what I did, yeah. The first time I met Longda, yeah, I saw him, you know, walking from his kuti, you know, I walked up, you know, and it's, somebody pressed me down, you know, I had to, you know, I had to go on my, you know, on my knees, you know, I mean, to be very low, yeah. And then he came up and said, you know, get up, get up. Yeah? But it was a feeling, you know, I mean, it's the first time I saw him, I was really, you know, close up to him, you know, and something really made me, you know, get on my knees, you know, and you know, put my hands together, you know, and then he said, get up, you know, get up. The thing about conceit is to realize, yeah? I mean, if you're lower than him, this is conceit, but you're not lower than him. But you're also not equal. You're not equal to him, yeah? And that was my biggest problem, yeah? If I'm not lower, then I'm equal. Or maybe I am higher, you know? To fight these things, you know, and said, I am the way I am, yeah? I try my best to do these things, but I don't want to want to put myself into a category that I'm lower or the equal or higher. Yeah?
Okay, so I mean, no one becomes an arahant without believing it's possible, right?
Yes, of course. You have to,
right.
You have to believe it, you know? You have to believe that it's possible, and you have believed that you can do it. This is something, you know, this...
I know it's possible. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. It is the thing, you know, that brings up, yeah? I mean, the will, yeah? The will, you know, it's a pure vita, the will. You know, wanting to do something, yeah, is the will, yeah? I mean, it's a form of avicca, yeah? But we have to use avicca until we can get rid of avicca, yeah? We have to use avicca to our advantage. We have to use the kilesas to our advantage that we get what we want, yeah? What we desire to. So if we want to climb up the mountain, there must be a desire to be, you know, to be able to climb up, even if it is difficult. This desire, you know, actually is a desire of avicca, yeah? But, you know, only until we are at the last step, yeah? Lukta Mahabodha said it, you know, I mean, sometimes, you know, before you reach arahant, you're on the last step before, you know, you reach a platform. So one foot is still on the highest step, you know, and one is, you know, already, you know, nearly touching down, yeah? So you're in the middle, yeah? And that's where you have to get rid of your desire and let yourself, you know, go into it. And okay. That is the... I mean, avicca is the last fetter. Remember that. And avicca is really the wanting, the desire, not only desire, it's the will, you know, that brings us to nibbana. Yeah? So we cannot let go of it, yeah? If somebody says, you know, I don't have any will, you know, this is a useless person, yeah?
Yeah.
And I know, you know, quite especially in the West, you know, a lot of people say, oh, no, I don't want anything, you know. I mean, if they don't want anything, you know, they get stuck in the round of birth and death, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so use the visa for now, worry about it later once hatred and greed are gone.
Yes.
But use it to kill hatred and greed.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Use the kilesas. I sometimes say, you know, there are bad kilesas, there are good kilesas. The good kilesas bring us towards Dhamma and the bad kilesas hold us away from Dhamma. So turn the bad kilesas in good kilesas. Once they are all good, you know, get rid of them.
Okay. Convert the enemy to your side, then kill your own army and you're done with it. Okay. Huh? I got
turn,
it.
Turn the enemy to be your friend, you know? Or your supporter, you know, and then once you are reaching the step, you know, then get rid of them.
Okay, thank you, Ajahn.
Yeah, Longpo, there's one more question.
Okay.
Hi, Ajahn. I have a question. Recently, my friend's mother was told that she has 3 months to live.
Your daughter has 3 more months?
My friend's mother.
Oh.
Yeah. So, it got me thinking about my own mortality. And I would like to know if we had only 3 months to live, what should we do? What should be the priority? And what can she do?
That depends on, you know, if she's a Buddhist, yeah, I mean, she should focus, you know, on, yeah, she should focus, first of all, on all her good deeds that she has done in her life, yeah, but secondly, you know, most importantly, she should focus her mind on the Buddha or on the breath, Anapanasati, get her mind calm, because the fear of death, you know, can drive us, you know, can drive us crazy, yeah. If we know that we are going to die, yeah, the best thing is, you know, to get rid of, yeah, fear. And said, I'm not dying, the body is dying, you know, when the body is dying, I just get a new body, yeah. So getting rid of the fear of death, yeah, is one thing, but making the mind clear so that it can decide at every moment where to go, yeah. Because death sooner or later comes to every one of us, yeah. But if we know, you know, we have 3 months to live, and, yeah. If she does a lot of meditation, it can happen that she can live much, much longer. Her worries make her sicker, more and more sicker, and she dies much, much, much quicker. Yeah? You understand that? Yeah? I mean, the worry about our health makes us more sick. Yeah? If we don't worry too much about our health, you know, I mean, we can overcome quite a few sicknesses, you know. I mean, the moment the body is relaxed, yeah, I mean, it can take care of itself, yeah. That's what it is for. That's what it is there for, yeah. It's a biological machine, you know. I mean, it knows how to react, yeah. If it cannot, you know, I mean, then it dies, of course, yeah. But the more we worried about it, you know, I mean, suppresses the power or the energy of the body to heal itself, yeah. So the best thing is to overcome the fear, to answer the question, overcome the fear, and then start to meditate Anapanasati or Buddha, yeah. And also, you know, when that comes closer, you know, remember, so the daughter should tell her mother, you know, all the good things that she did in her life, yeah. So that she, you know, that she doesn't worry about all the things that she did wrong, yeah. Because that leads her down to hell, yeah? Yeah? If she knows what she did, you know, good, oh yeah, this I did good, this I did good, then she has a freer mind, yeah? That doesn't pull her down, you know, to hell, yeah? Okay?
Would you recommend that she do many good deeds during these 3 months? Is it still in time to build good karma, to do merits?
To do what?
Merits.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure. If she can do it, you know, yes. Yeah. It's good. I mean, if I do merit, you know, I mean, if I do something good, you know, I feel good. I mean, I never feel bad when I do something good. Yeah. So that is also helpful. Yeah.
Thank you, Ajahn.
Okay. So, Sani, everything?
Yes, Lumpur, yeah, I think that's all the questions. No further questions from Zoom.
Yeah, and there are no further questions from here, so let's finish up, yeah?
Okay, see you everyone next month.